Tribeca, right next to the Narrow, but I'll be hood forever. I'm the new Sinatra, and since I made it here, I can make it anywhere. Yeah, they love me everywhere. I used to cop in Harlem, all of my Dominicanos right there up on Broadway. Pulled me back to that McDonald's, took it to my stash spot, 560 State Street. Catch me in the kitchen like the Simmons whipping pastry. Cruising down A Street, off-white Lexus, driving so slow, but BK is from Texas. Me, I'm out that Bed-Stuy, home of that boy Biggie. Now I live on Billboard, and I brought my boys with me. Say what up to Tata, still sipping my ties, sitting courtside, Knicks and Nets give me high five. I be spiked out, I could trip a referee, tell by my attitude that I most definitely from. I made the Yankee hat more famous than the Yankee king. You should know I bleed blue, but I ain't a crypto. But I got a gang of walking with my click though. Welcome to the melting pot, corners where we selling. Africa been by the home of the hip-hop. Yellow cap, gypsy cap, dollar cap, holla back. For foreigners, it ain't fair, they act like they forgot how to act. 8 million stories out there in the naked city. It's a pity half of y'all won't make it. Me, I got a plug special, and I got it made. If Jesus paying LeBron, I'm paying Dwayne Wade. 3 dice Z-Lo, 3 card Marley. Labor Day parade, rest in peace Bob Marley. Statue of Liberty, long live the World Trade, long live the King, yo. I'm from the Empire State. That's so they could step out of bounds quick. The sidelines is lined with casualties who sip the life casually, then gradually become worse. Don't fight the Apple Eve, caught up in the in crowd. Now you're in style, and in the winter gets cold, in vogue with your skin out. City of sin, it's a pity on a whim. Good girls going bad, the city's filled with them. Mommy took a bus trip, now she got a bust out. Everybody ride her, just like a bus route. Hail Mary to the city, you're a virgin, and Jesus can't save you. Life starts when the church in. Came here for school, graduated to the highlight. Ball players, rap stars, addicted to the limelight. MC and May got you feeling like a champion. The city never sleeps, better slip you an ambient.
And good morning. Music is like poetry and has a message. And history like a diamond shines clear to the truth. You see, words have meanings that we can comprehend like definitions. And news can show us a chain of events that we may not always understand. I'm asking each and every one of you in the Quest listenership audience to now pull back our musical curtain to see and hear the contributions of our diaspora, and you're sure to find our Quest moment, where we attempt to make waves, indeed, vibrations. So I want to thank you once again for joining us to hear a different perspective of our community. Now, today, we welcome you back to another edition of Quest Youth Radio, which is, by the way, the best youth radio. Our topic for discussion will be on the emergence of street art and graffiti. It will be led by our very own panelist, guest today, Tamir Davis. Now, without any further ado, we have our guest, Tamir Davis, and we also have our regular panelist, who's sure to surprise with any type of comment or question, that's Mr. Shelton Harris. So, Mr. Harris, I want to say good morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. Okay, and there you are. Well, we're going to jump right into it. Graffiti art. Well, you know, according to the research I've done, and I don't proclaim to be a specialist on graffiti art or street art, but according to what I've looked up online, graffiti art is a term that refers to images or text painted usually on the building, typically using spray paint. And graffiti art has its origins in the 70s in New York, thus the song New York at the beginning with Jay-Z and Alicia Keys, right? New York, when young people began to use spray paint and other materials to create images on buildings and on the side of subway cars and trains. Well, such graffiti can range from bright graphic images, which is referred to as wild style, and to the stylized monogram tags. So with that being said, I want to bring in Mr. Tamir Davis and the emergence of street art and graffiti. My first question to you is, what is the origin of street art and graffiti? That's two forms of art, but one question. What's the origins of street art and graffiti?
Well, the origins of street art and graffiti actually stems from person, government name is Durham McCray and or Cornbread. Cornbread was out of Berrytown, Philadelphia, which is a neighborhood in North Philadelphia. Started in the early 1960s out of Philadelphia. He and a group of friends actually started doing graffiti in Philadelphia. And then what they would do is actually write their monikers on walls throughout the city. And what happens is he eventually goes to the youth house back in the 65. He was incarcerated in the youth house. It was called the Youth Development Center. And while at the Youth Development Center, he adopted the name Cornbread. And during that particular time, a lot of the young adults in the youth facility was actually tagging up as it related to gangs. He's to be coined as one of the first writers to actually tag his name without being affiliated as a gang member or a part of a gang. So he was tagging on his own volition and actually not promoting any affiliation with any gang members during a particular time. And so after this particular situation, he's released. He develops a crush on the girl, Cynthia Coltis, and to get her attention, he actually wrote Cornbread Love Cynthia all over North Philadelphia and continued the tagging. And so in 71, Cornelius Hosley was actually shot dead in a gang war. And in Philadelphia, newspapers actually incorrectly identified him as Cornbread, the tagger. So Cornbread then decided to take this opportunity, captivating it, and was actually able to get additional attention based on the fact that he was forcefully pronounced as being dead. And so then what he did was, and one of the largest zoos in the country, which is Philadelphia Zoo, one of the first and maybe one of the largest zoos, he then goes and tags all over Cornbread Lives, and he tagged his name on an elephant that he had met a few days prior. Due to this, he was arrested and had to serve community service. Now, in the community service, he... which is in 1984, Mayor Wilson Good founded the Anti-Graffiti Network and recruited McCray or Cornbread to help stop the inner-city youth from tagging. And then it turned into a mutual arts program, with the largest art program in the United States. Now, during this particular time, a lot of writers or family members from New York had family members in Philadelphia. So the family members from New York would actually meet, and this is prior to the Wild Style being actually formed and developed, because now we're going back to the 60s, and Wild Style was something that came after one of the precursors in terms of a stylist, the person is Phase 2, who actually created the bubble letters and created different styles. So Phase 2, who actually passed away back in 2019, was one of the progenitors in New York City in terms of style. So New York City is really known for style in terms of the lettering and what have you, but the origination of graffiti and Otagon actually stems from Philadelphia.
Okay, so allow me to interject, and I'm not an expert, so if you please let me stick to my little questions, because I see you just, you know, you're going on, and which is great. So I might be redundant here by asking you what the history of street art is, and it sounds like you just gave it to us. Is that correct?
And what happens is, out of the tagging, as this may mention, there was a lot of different arts programs developed to quell the gang violence. Just like there was gang violence and problems with gangs in Philadelphia, it was the same scenario in New York, where you had the Spades and different types of gangs in New York. And then you also had gangs in New Jersey, all over. So it seemed to have been part of development of youth who was going through rites of passage and so on and so forth, stuff like that.
So if you let me interject again, right, which leads me to the next question, which is, what is the history of graffiti art in the U.S.? Now, you just mentioned street gangs being out throughout the United States, but what is the history of street art in the U.S.?
Well,
I guess a better question would be, does it come out of the gang lifestyle?
Well, I think when you're dealing with street art, now we're going to move fast forward into to more current times, maybe during the 80s, late 70s, early 80s, when you have people like Basquiat that was actually putting their tags or putting their symbols on the wall, and he was actually discovered by Andy Warhol. Now, what Andy Warhol had done with this particular tagger and our street artists was able to actually finance some of interest, because Andy Warhol was independently wealthy, and he did a lot of silk screening with the Campbell soup, with a lot of different aspects of culture during that time, dealing with the industrialization, dealing with different aspects of things that was very popular in American culture. So then with Basquiat, who was at one time a tagger, was discovered as an artist and was endorsed and what have you. A lot of the street artists during the 80s who was tagging and actually going into the subway trains as a matter of being able to get, you know, identification, to get recognized, so on and so forth, that had caught the attention of an art director by the name of Henry Chaffant, and who actually coined some books, Subway Art, and other different types of graffiti books, and also another great photographer, Martha Cooper. So now
I'm going to stop you again, because I think you just explained when the story of graffiti turns in or begins. The question is, when did the story of modern graffiti art begin? And I think you just
But there's more to it, though. There's more to it. What happens is during the 70s, during the intense economic, astringent economic situation, and then what happens is a lot of the teachers is laid off. Like, for example, the 1977 blackout was a very important part of development or the expansion of hip-hop, because there was some looting taking place during the blackout. And then in addition to that, a lot of the families didn't have resources. You look at the South Bronx, you look at people in Newark that suffered from the economic intensity of a scarcity of financial and other resources. So those artists that, those kids that, the students that were gifted with art wasn't going to be recognized anyway, because there were no art programs in the school to help facilitate their interest. There were no music programs because a lot of those club programs was cut or many teachers were laid off. So those people, those students that went to art and design and different types of schools, so on and so forth, and had art skill sets and stuff like that, a lot of them created graffiti crews and worked together, and they began to become discovered by people such as Henry Chaffant, Martha Cooper, who gave those people an opportunity and a platform. And this is going simultaneously with the development of hip-hop. So when we talk about phase two, now we're going to fast forward in terms of, we're out of Philadelphia, now we're in the Bronx. This is prior to the August 11, 1973 block party, if you will, on that had taken place in the Bronx between Cool Herc and his sister, who actually organized it. She organized it to be able to get some funding to be able to go to school, some clothes and stuff like that for students. So with all of this taking place, phase two was a part of that whole reality, and he was developing a lot of the flyers for the shows, the hip hoppers. For example, the person that actually that did the screenplay for New Jack City, Barry Michael Cooper, was affiliated with, if you talk about the first graffiti movie back in 83, which is Wild Style, the person in the movie was Fab Five Freddy, who was also a broadcasting personality on a lot of the different hip-hop networks. He was also a graffiti artist, and he played the part Fade, which was actually Phase 2, and Phase 2 was a consultant on the first hip-hop movie that actually was produced by Shelly Ahern.
Mm-hmm. So let me get this question in, right? Because you probably answered it already. Again, not an expert over here, but I'm just trying to get the information as best I can. Why did street art emerge as an art form?
The thing is that the street art emerged as an art form because mainstream culture started to recognize street art. So now you have these large subways between five boroughs, and people from France and all over the world started seeing that as a quasi-tourist reality. Because when you look at the trains, you're seeing really great, terrific artwork being done, not with hands, with paintbrushes, whatever, but aerosol paint. So you had to take, and it took a lot of deep concentration, and you had to learn how to begin to develop hand control with the antiquated, the prior spray cans from the companies such as Rust-Oleum spray paint, Crayon, so on and so forth. So you had to develop that skill set to get your hands and your muscles ready to be able to do that on a train. So they're taking it. So now people are coming into New York. New York is a very financially abundant tourist site now. So when they're coming in for Christmas and all this other type of stuff, they're taking pictures of the train. So when they're taking pictures of the train, they're taking those pictures back home, and their adolescents are now looking at it. Now hip-hop is spreading, not just from New York. Now it's going worldwide.
Okay, so
now it's in Germany, in France.
Okay, so you just went to my last question, and that's who started the graffiti movement, which you probably already answered.
I would say that it wasn't. Now, you have some cornbread, for example, is a very important person that helped move of the reality for it in terms of tagging his name Cornbread in Philadelphia. But I would say history is not a reality of just one person. History is as a collective of people. So during the time of the gang violence, everybody was pretty much tagging. That tagging, just like you had people from New York traveling over to Philadelphia, you had people and family members from California traveling to Philadelphia seeing that reality as well. You see what I'm saying? So what happened is the zygotes started moving by the people who were depressed and wanted to express themselves via the tagging, the artwork. A lot of the sometimes, if you look at the trains, you would see, like Lee did a train, Stop the Bomb, you know, dealing with the possible nuclear fallout during the Cold War. And the Cold War had ended in 1989, and at the same time, the subway systems became more stringent, and people weren't able to actually tag on the train or paint on do murals on the train around 88, 89. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
So, and if you look at when the Berlin Wall that was actually tore down, if you see that wall and look at the pictures, there was a lot of graffiti artwork on that wall, which had a lot of important political expressions. If I'm not mistaken, this is during the time of Bolshevik.
Okay, so now I want to bring in Mr. Harris. Mr. Harris, I've dominated the discussion here, but actually Mr. Davis has dominated the discussion. But I want to just bring you in for a comment that you may have or a question. Take it away, Mr. Harris. Again, good morning.
Good morning again. One of my questions is that I've noticed that that Mr. Davis is focusing on the artistic side of graffiti, and it truly is. But when it was during its infancy, it was vandalism. You know, even though the individual artist felt like he was expressing himself in a certain way, he wasn't doing that on his own house or on his own subway. So when did the acceptance of the vandalism, because a lot of people went to jail for graffiti art.
And some people,
a lot of them went to jail. Yeah. And, you know, I'm kind of glad in a way that you brought up Philly, because I went to high school down in Philly. This was like in the late 60s, early 70s. And their whole town was tagged completely, but it was, like you were saying, it was more gang-related than it was an artistic, you know, form, you know, and when did, you know, and the part that really got me kind of messed up was that it wasn't until the appropriation of people outside of the culture start seeing the value in it, and then all of a sudden it became something productive instead of something destructive. And, you know, can you break it out a little bit?
Yeah, I can. So now, fast forward, we're going to go back and then go forward. Mayor John Lindsay in 1971 and throughout 1976, he actually engaged in the war on this whole war against graffiti. Actually started with Mayor Lindsay. And then later, for example, in 76, 77, Mayor Abraham Beam actually spent $20 million to buff trains. Now, if you're buffing trains for $20 million, how many contractors is involved with actually receiving the work to buff those trains? It's another question. You see what I'm saying? So there was a lot of political stuff taking place during this particular time. And then at the same time, they're doing this when people all over the world are coming into New York for various different reasons, because we all live in one world. You know, we all live in one world. Now, when the information of Star Wars comes out in 82, 83, doesn't just stop here in the United States. It was on PBS. So being on PBS, everybody had an opportunity to take a look at it, and that was shared all over the world. The people overseas,
but by then, Just let me interject this little thing, and then I'll let you finish. But by then, in the 80s, the whole idea of graffiti has been going on for 20 years around here. And like you said again, people would come and not knowing that it was being viewed as vandalism from our point of view, they thought it was an artistic expression that when they came to visit certain places, they would see something and say, oh, this is beautiful, and we want to take this back home, and look what we saw in New York. You know, and it was that transition that changed it from being a criminal enterprise to not even being a profitable enterprise for most of the artists. You know, they just got recognition, but they didn't make any money out of it.
Yes.
So, you know, so to me, that's where the transition came in.
The thing is that in 1983, September 28th, 1983, Michael Stewart was killed by cops. Let me just take a look at this. Michael Stewart was actually killed for the facing. So he dies at the hands of the police. They beat him. You know, and this is so you can equate Michael Stewart to the current day situation of Amadou Diallo and all those other people that were killed by cops for just writing on the train. So just doing some defacement. This is 30 years ago. This had taken place. But what happens is people saw the value in the artist, and then this is during the time of the development of hip hop. And hip hop artists was actually the driving force. I mean, the artist, the graffiti artist, which is the first element, were the driving force in hip hop culture. Most of the records, albums that were done, most of the T-shirts that were done, most of the clothing that's done from Rockefeller clothing on down, still to this day, most of Sean John's clothing was done by graffiti artists. They were the designers of the clothes. That's a fact. So now we're talking about something that morphed into it. Mm-hmm. A multi-billion dollar industry.
Okay.
In fact,
and with that being said,
$2 trillion.
Okay, but that being said, Mr. Davis, you do more than just dabble in graffiti. Please highlight and educate us on what you bring to the table as far as street art and graffiti yourself.
Well, I am a street artist. I am a part of a lot of these graffiti crews. I've been doing graffiti since, I would say, as far back as 86. Growing up in Newark, a lot of us was engaged in the graffiti. We would draw, we would share designs with each other in the art class and so on and so forth. You talk about as far back as 84 when Beach Street dropped. We knew somebody was going to be a break dancer, somebody else was going to be a graffiti artist. We wanted to do the whole Rainbow Lee type thing. So I was raised in a community where hip-hop was very important. Rappers were there. Hassan 7-Eleven, who was some of the known rappers, would actually come to Newark. They was probably one of the first groups that was actually signed to a company, Easy Street Records. So I've been involved with hip-hop. Hip-hop is a part of me. Hip-hop is a part of my life.
Okay. Mr. Harris, you got 30 seconds for some last words here on the topic of the emergence of street art and graffiti.
All right, 30 seconds. The idea of street art actually goes back thousands of years. People have been tagging stuff even since the ancient Egyptians. So the idea of doing that is not new. The idea of that not being looked at in a negative way is new. And those are the types of things that need to be pushed more, because some people still look at it as vandalism. And there's still a lot of laws on the books that still let street art as vandalism without a permit. So we need to keep it up.
Okay. Mr. Davis, last words.
This is how important graffiti became over the years. There's a recent settlement of graffiti artwork that was on the walls in Five Points in New York. Five Points was a place where everybody all over the world and came to get graffiti. The building was actually slated to be knocked down. Once they knocked the building down, there was a major lawsuit settlement for all the artists in an amount of millions because laws had came out from Library of Congress stating that that's still their artwork. So we're seeing where graffiti is going from a legal perspective and its impact. We're talking about artists paid out in hundreds of thousands of dollars. Graffiti is here, and I believe that a street art is here to stay.
Okay. And those are going to be the last words. Mr. Davis, thank you. Mr. Harris, thank you. This has been a very interesting topic to discuss. And believe me, this is not going to be the last time. You can tune in to Quest Youth Radio, the best youth radio, on 89.5 WSOU every Saturday morning from 7 to 8 a.m. Ladies and gentlemen, we're streaming live on WSOU.net. You can also check us out on social media platforms like Facebook and Instagram. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, Quest Youth Radio is the best youth radio.
The best.
You know it.